Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Psychotherapist Richard Hogan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Brendan.
And Richard, we are going to talk about some ugly emotions today. jealousy, yeah. Envy, and then all that bitterness and resentment that comes with them. Feelings that I think we don't like to admit to a lot. And as ever, you're happy to take some questions so people can text 51551 or email Brendan at rte.ie. So, just to set up our parameters first, are jealousy and envy two different things?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, and it's a very important conversation because we don't talk about these emotions. I think we're okay to talk about getting angry and having aggression and that, but we don't like to talk about envy.
Are we ashamed?
I think we're ashamed. There's a stigma, isn't there? Because we understand that there's a vulnerability in there. There's a sense of an inadequacy in there because envy is like the, you know, it's around wanting something that someone has, and jealousy is a fear that we're going to lose something that we might have. You know, so there's the distinction between the two things.
Okay.
And so they're quite negative emotions. And I think there's a huge stigma around it. And I meet it across the spectrum of life in my clinic. And people are always very slow to say, I'm quite a jealous person. But here's the thing, Brendan, particularly romantic jealousy, you know, that its roots go deep, I mean, very deep back into our psyche, right down the psychological and evolutionary strata. We're hardwired to experience jealousy. We all experience it. You've experienced it. I've experienced it. Your producers out here have experienced it. Everybody has experienced that little twinge, that little bit of jealousy, because starting out, it was about a relationship that might be, that was important to us, that might be under threat. And it was a way to motivate us, to prompt us to take action, to save it or to end it and to find what we had in that somewhere else. And so it's normal to feel it. So what I'm trying to do for people listening to it, we all feel it in varying degrees throughout our life.
Okay, it's a good place to start. Yeah. Go easy on ourselves.
Go easy on ourselves and feeling it.
And like the thing is, of course, there are other people can be victims of our jealousy and envy.
Of course, that's...
But they are very, very corrosive feelings for the person actually feeling them.
Oh, my
they?
God. I don't know if there's anything more destructive for us than those feelings. They are the rotwood of our soul, and I think they can collapse our lives. We can tear down the life around us that we've worked so hard to build. I think those jealousy, envy things. And you're not thriving in your life when you're envious of other people, when you're consumed by what other people have. You're not thriving. You're giving away that gift, that miracle that we've often talked about here, that 400 quadrillion to the power of 150,000, yeah. That magic of life. And you're thinking, what does Brendan have that I don't have? You know, it's a terrible position.
Yeah, so pull back and go, it's a miracle we're here. It's a miracle you and me are here today at all.
You know what, Brendan?
What were the chances?
Brendan, yeah. Someone else's success isn't your failure.
Okay.
That's such an important thing to teach your children. Because of siblings and all the rest.
Yeah.
But it's important for us when we're looking around and we're seeing other people as we perceive it succeeding. That's not an indication of my failure. That's their success.
Yeah. So we probably tend to try and ignore it in ourselves, push it down or whatever. Bad idea.
Bury it. Yeah. Very bad. Just push it down there.
That
seems to always go well for us, doesn't it? When we bury stuff, that's the best way to deal with it. It's particularly Irish. Just ignore that thing knocking away there at me and it should go away. And of course it doesn't. Okay. Acknowledging it, you know, and of course, as we get into this conversation, our early connection with our primary caregiver is always present in our interactions as adults and young adults and all the rest of it. And so if we had an anxious attachment, which has nothing to do with us, you know what I mean? If the person who reared us was maybe not so dependable and predictable in the love that they gave us, it's going to create a fracture in our foundation. And so we're going to develop, I mean, this is really fundamental stuff here. We're going to develop a sense that I'm going to be abandoned here, you know, and I'm not worthy of love. And then we're wondering, why do I feel jealousy? You know what I mean? Why do I feel that really awful stuff? It's because I have a terrible fear that I'm not enough. And if I'm with somebody and they're chatting to somebody at the bar, that person at the bar is going to steal them because I'm not good enough, clearly. And, you know, it's
okay.
So we blame ourselves and we say terrible things to ourselves for feeling it. But there's a myriad of reasons why we feel it.
Okay. But it's rooted fundamentally in our own insecurity then, which is not our fault either. It goes back to
exactly
the early days.
It goes back to earliness, but our early development. But of course, we're not what happened to us. We are who we choose to become. We can identify it and we can figure it out. Why do I feel this? What was my early attachments like? Why do I have a sense that I'm not enough? Why don't I value myself enough? Why do I think somebody's so easily going to walk into my life and take everything that I have, right? Or why do I constantly look at other people and think, I wish I had what they have? And I would say, you know, if you feel jealousy or envy, it could be the catalyst for that moment in your life where you kind of go, I'm going to get precise about what I want out of life and I'm going to stop thinking about what other people have and start getting a bit more focused on me.
Okay. So it's another manifestation, it strikes me, of the want.
Yeah.
Having the want in
exactly.
The person who has the want in them. Yeah,
absolutely.
But come here, most of us grow out of childish feelings, really, or learn to manage them or something along the way. But the jealousy, envy kind of... We don't grow out of them so easily,
no? We don't, because let's say we're working as teacher and, you know, and someone gets a promotion, we're all at the same level, that can really hurt. You've gone for the promotion. Or maybe you avoid the promotion because you don't want to get rejected from the promotion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All of these things. And so you, again...
Oh, yeah, show them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the stuff that's corrosive for the soul, you know? And we experience it throughout our lives. Even in retirement, someone's living a better retirement than we're living. And so it can go on right through our lives.
Okay, so a lot of people's first introduction to jealousy can be, you alluded there to sibling relationships, sibling rivalry, as it's known.
Yeah.
Is that unavoidable?
No, I don't think it's unavoidable. I think who's the first person you compare yourself to is your brother or sister. I suppose that's unavoidable. That's who you're going to compare it. But it becoming toxic and really pathological in your relationships and trying to outdo your siblings and all that, I think that's avoidable. Of course, I think that is avoidable. I think parents can sometimes set their children up for this utter sense of competition. You know, when you tell your children, I love you all the same, all of a sudden, if I'm a little bit better at what you love me for, then I can get more of your love. You know, what I'd always say to parents when they're thinking about these ideas is what I'd say to my own children, and I saw it just taking down all that competition stuff is I love you the same amount. The amount of love is the same for different reasons. Right? So now it's not a competition for the love.
Okay.
And I could hear my daughter one night, I was walking up the stairs, my youngest daughter Sophie was saying to her sister, who they share a room with, what do you think it is that dad loves about you? And then my daughter was saying, I think it's because of this, and I think it's because he loves me for this. And it was just a little bit of them celebrating their difference. Not that they're the same and not that the love is the same amount and that they can compete for it. It's for the difference in the uniqueness of each other. And I think that's where we have to help our children to understand that love like that. And also that if your sibling succeeds at something, let's say they're brilliant at chess or they're brilliant at tennis, and their success isn't a failure, your failure. That's their success. Let's celebrate their success, but let's celebrate your success too. And it's a really important thing that we're teaching them about the uniqueness of each other, that they're not looking at each other all the time, think, I wish I was better. Because, of course, some of them might have more aptitude for sport and one of them might have more aptitude for academia and all that. But when parents say, you're the smart one and you're the tennis sporty one, you're setting your children up for a kind of a limited perception of themselves. And that's kind of constraining for them.
Interesting, though, not to say I love you the same.
Yeah, yeah. I find
I think a lot of people would think that's the answer.
I love you the same. Yeah.
Okay, but that's setting up the competition.
For different reasons.
Yeah. And that's
and then the uniqueness part comes in there, you see. But that's really good to pick up on that, because parents, I love you all the same. I love you the exact same. Now it can be competitive. Now I can get more of your love if I'm a bit more of what you love us for.
And it's back to then someone else's success is not your failure.
Yeah.
That kids view the love as a kind of a zero-sum game. So if someone else gets more of it, I get less of it. If I get more of it, they'll get less of it.
Yeah.
Okay. So come to then teenage relationships. And if we go maybe more on the jealousy kind of bit here than envy initially, right? And I suppose that we have friendships first and then boyfriends and girlfriends, right? So will we talk about friendships first? Parents need to be wise to jealousy in teenage friendships and stuff.
And of course there will be a little bit of jealousy. That's a part of learning how to manage and regulate yourself. It's not that you can get rid of that experience for your teenagers, and nor should you want to, but it's helping them to manage it. And what exactly is it that you're jealous of? And have, you know, asking some nice questions. They might say to you that this is what would kind of common happen when, like, two friends go to the cinema and then you don't get invited and you go to the cinema and you see them walking out of the cinema and you're kind of going, why the hell wasn't I invited? Right? And your child comes home and they're upset and very hurt by that because they feel excluded in some ways, I would help them to figure that out. Was that the movie that you wanted to go to see? You know, I'd help them to apply good logic. Why do you think they went to that movie? If we change the story of what you're telling yourself, it's because they don't like me. Was it that they didn't think you'd like to go to that movie? Did they think you weren't available to go to that movie? You know, rather than it must be something about me and then they internally attribute to themselves, it's an important thing to help your child to ask a few questions about something that they're feeling jealous about, because then it's not that narrative of they don't like me or I'm not that good or they don't want me. That's why they didn't ask me.
Okay, yeah.
Good logic.
Irish parents would have said in the olden days was, they're just jealous of you.
Exactly. Yeah. But see, that's diminishing your child's experience as well. That hurt. What hurt particularly about that? And if we're not thinking about it like a story of you being rejected, was it that they just wanted to go to see that movie and they didn't think you wanted to go? Or maybe they didn't think you were available? Now you're helping them to critically think a bit better, you know, because we immediately attribute everything internally. It must be because they don't like me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not that.
And it's not personal, it's not permanent, and it's only specific to only this situation, it's not everything.
And they will feel these. And see, that's the thing. I'm not saying they should feel those things, that's important. Okay. But you help them to apply better logic than the way they apply it to it.
Okay, so then boyfriends, girlfriends, and jealousy in that situation, and we know something that can become very
coercive,
toxic, and we understand that much better now.
There's a lot of parents listening to this who would have daughters in relationships that they know are very problematic and pathological.
Is that going on in the teenage years,
For sure. Absolutely. And even with friends, it would be going on amongst friends. You know, one of the members of the group is a little bit more submissive and they're being completely dominated by a much more stronger personality. There's no doubt about that. I suppose the thing I'd always try to do, I've got three daughters myself and one of them is moving towards 14 and all the romantic world and all that kind of stuff is coming in, which I hate, Brendan.
Stop.
I have to say. It's ahead. Yeah. I hate it. But of course, I don't really hate it. It's maturation, it's development. But what I've always tried to teach is that, you know, having compassion and empathy and all of those things, they're lovely, but you have to have teeth in the world. And if you don't want to do something, if you don't like something, and if you don't like the way someone is behaving or treating you or acting with you or speaking to you, you have to have teeth in the world.
Good one.
Yeah, you have to have teeth and you have to say no. I don't want, that's not a relationship I want. I mean, that's a really important thing to teach your daughters, particularly daughters. I don't want them just to be compassionate. I want that too, but I want them to have teeth and I want them to value themselves, that they don't feel that they have to do something because then the person will like me. You know, you have to teach them. No, and a part of that is when they argue with me when they were younger, I didn't stop them from arguing. I didn't crucify them for arguing with me. I heard the argument. I let them develop their ability to argue with me. And I said, that was a good point. So you're developing the sense of self that they should be able to argue with you.
Not be nice.
Not to be, you know what happens particularly to girls? Too agreeable. Don't be that agreeable.
Okay, broader envy then, coveting, remember as it used to be called in the Bible, you coveting your neighbour's wife and his goods and all kinds of things. And look, the problem is, this is a problem for grown adults who are perfectly like functional in every other way. We have never had so much exposure to what other people have versions of
social
their
media,
lives
all
and holidays and the whole lot,
Oh, yeah. Beware of jealousy. Beware, my lord, of jealousy, says Iago in Othello, for it's the green-eyed monster which doth mock itself and feed on the meat. And it feeds on the meat. You know,
There's never been so much meat around,
there's
really.
There's never been so much meat around. You know, it's just...
So what can grown adults do to cure themselves? Because I think it makes people sad when they spend a session on Instagram or wherever looking at other people's amazing. It just makes them sad in a simple way.
It does. And I would say, this is what I would say, if you're feeling that envy about other people, and because we're talking about envy here, it is a great moment to figure out what is it that you want in your life, because a lot of people don't know what it is they want. They're sitting in their armchair just looking at everybody else's life and they're critical and cynical of everything else. Nothing is more destructive to your joy than that. You know, when you're looking at everybody else and you're comparing everybody else's success to some sort of internal inadequacy that you have, I would say this is the moment to get precise in your life and figure out what it is, because as I see it, the gap between who you want to be and who you are currently, you know, if that's an aperture, if that's wide, the chances of you feeling intense envy and jealousy is massively increased. The more that's narrowed, the more joy you have. There are people who don't feel these things so intensely because they're in themselves and they're happy with how their life is and they've worked towards their future self and brought things into their lives that they want, and they look around and think, this is exactly what I wanted. This is what I brought into my life. And so they're not looking at everybody else's life and thinking, there's Brendan now over in on some yacht and there's Richard over there. You're not looking at those things. You're thinking about yourself.
So you're competing with your best version
self.
Of your own life.
Exactly.
Well.
That's who
and
you are.
Get precise is interesting. So actually we should sit down and think, what do I want my life to look like in detail? Yeah,
Brendan, this is what I do in my clinic all the time. People come in drenched in like sadness and jealousy and envy and cynicism and all those things, and I look at them and say, what is it that you want? And that can be a troubling question because I've never actually thought about what it is I want. All I know is what I don't have. Right? And we can view our lives so easily in deficits. But what happens if I started looking and thinking, what is it that I want? Now, if I started moving towards that, all of a sudden you'd see this massive gap between where you were sitting, observing cynically of everybody else, and actually moving towards some sort of fulfillment, some sort of meaning in your life, and actually beginning to respect yourself and value yourself. Once you do that, those feelings of envy and jealousy dissipate.
Okay. Okay, so you can't, you're not going to change the world, change yourself,
no,
right?
Change yourself.
There's great texts and emails here kind of illustrating specifics of all of this kind of stuff. My dad keeps telling me I'm jealous of my siblings and that I've always been jealous. Okay, that's helpful. And yes, my siblings are higher earners. It's like he's almost telling me they're better than me. I'm so confused, Martin.
You know, can I answer that, Martin?
Yeah.
Because as you spoke with David there, money is something we made up, you know. Honestly, I've researched all of this about life meaning and life satisfaction. At the end of life, we don't think, I wish I had got just another house or just another BMW or just another apartment in New York. If I had that, I would have had a meaning. No one says that stuff. It's all about the relationships that you have with people. Money and monetary gain. Of course, we all like to have more money and we'd all love that, whatever it is, to have more space and freedom to do things. But it's all a nothing. It's a shadow.
Got rich people's problems.
It's a shadow.
Like, okay, you know, you've got slightly poorer people's problems. They've got rich people's problems, I guarantee.
It's shadow play. Yeah. Don't listen to that. You know what that is? It's an internalized prejudice that your dad has around money and success and all that. That's this tiny metric that we have. Don't look at that. Don't get sucked into that. Step back. You're not your thoughts. You're the observer of them. When you hear those, you don't have to jump on those emotionally and think, yeah, I haven't succeeded. My brothers make so much more money than me. He gets a bonus and I don't get... Pull back from that stuff because that's that game that you get dragged into that. Don't allow that in.
Okay. Now, here's a trickier one, right? My husband's jealousy of my relationship with my child from a previous relationship destroyed our marriage, which ended in divorce. It's been devastating trying to recover from the trauma of what happened. How do I get over this? Something I felt helpless in.
Yeah, that's a very heavy and... It happens a lot with blended families. There's a lot of that. You know,
Does it?
That there's a jealousy between one of the members in the couple that the parent and the child's relationship is deeper than their relationship with their children, and it brings up all sorts of things. You would never want to change your love for your child. That's such an important thing. The person that you were in a relationship with there who destroyed that relationship because of their jealousy had a fundamental crack there. Like whatever went on for them in their childhood, this brought up all of that stuff that they never had worked out. And the only way to overcome this, I would say, is I think you probably need to go and talk to somebody about what happened in the relationship, but also going back into a relationship again and meeting somebody who's healthier, because it sounds like that person has an awful lot to give in a relationship. Don't let that relationship taint you and make you fearful of other relationships and avoid other relationships. I would say that was that person's issue. But somebody else you might meet might be able to meet and celebrate your love with your child, because I think a healthy relationship would be delighted for you and would be celebrating that you love your child and would be nurturing of that. And so that's nothing that you should feel guilty about.
Good point. Okay. I feel jealous of friends with supporting, loving, enabling families surrounding them. It seems to put a magnifying glass on the gaps in my life.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I felt this, I absolutely felt this when my friend's father died. It was the weirdest time I've ever felt it. My friend's father died at 22. And when we were 22, his father died. And I remember being at the funeral and feeling incredible envy for his emotions for his father who had just died, because I had a difficult relationship with my own father. And like what that caller is saying there, what the text message there, it illuminates things in your life that aren't what you want them to be, that gap is different, and it feels terrible, Brendan. I don't like to admit that, feeling that. That was a terribly, or it was an uncomfortable thing to feel, you know. It was, I didn't know what it was at 22. I didn't know what that feeling was. But now as I analyse it, as I got older, it was envy for that relationship that he had with his father and all those feelings that he had when his father died. I wanted to have those kind of feelings. And It was really uncomfortable. Like, I mean, it was really uncomfortable. And like, what I think sitting down and figuring out that and coming to terms with how your family is and what the dynamics is, and that it's not your friend's family, that might be a bit more, you know, functioning and a little bit more loving and a little bit more together than your family. That's not your family. But you can create a life for yourself that is that. And that's what I probably did myself, how I kind of ameliorated that one, as I made sure that my relationship with my children was healthy and loving, and my wife was nurturing and caring. And so that my family, when I went home to it, that was my family now. And that's my love and my caring and my nurturing piece of my life that healed all of that earlier stuff. And I think with that caller, it's a really honest thing to say.
So hang on. You created your own family then, basically. Is that what people do, like, if their family of origin is not great, they will often double down on, I'm creating a new family now, and this one's going to be different.
I definitely did that. Yeah. Or they can seek out the dysfunction that they grew up in. I mean, you know, you can have a couple of responses to it there, but I certainly thought, I'm not bringing this forward into my life. In fact, I want my children to be excited when I'm coming home, and I want them, you know, to have this lovely relationship with them, and that for me really healed an awful lot, you know.
Okay. There's a few texts here mentioning the word dwelling. Mm. How do I stop dwelling on it, says one person. Someone else says, like, how can I own it? Do I acknowledge it? Is it part of embracing our shadow side? So I suppose in practical terms, if someone's stuck in the immediate now, in that spiral.
First of all, as I said to you, we're hardwired. We're meant to feel it. We're meant to feel jealousy. It's in us to feel, because it's meant to be like a warning system that something in our relationship is slightly off. Sometimes we feel it because something in our relationship is off.
Let's come back to that one in a sec. Yeah. Right. So in the immediate, somebody's spiraling, obsessing, whatever. Like, what's step one out of that?
Step one is listening to the story that you're telling yourself about what is it that's happening that you're jealous of. Like, I would write it down and have a look at it, because parts of the brain regions are separated. The regions with emotions and logic are separated.
Okay.
And so when we become emotionally jealous and all that kind of stuff, it overrides logic. And so we mightn't be thinking clearly. A lot of people do a lot of really terrible things when they're overwhelmed by their jealousy, right? Because logic and rationality get short-circuited, and the emotional side responds to behaviour.
So we force ourselves back into that side of the brain if we start writing it down.
Yeah, the left side,
Front, and presumably that will stop a spiral in the immediate anyway.
So I would say write it down, have a look at it, and then start to think about the story that you're telling yourself. Kind of try to like observe your thoughts around it. Don't be your thoughts, because you're not your thoughts. You're just observing them. Have a look at what it is you think that's happening there, right? And then I would sit down with my partner and have a conversation. And not at night time when you're tired going to bed, or not in the morning. I would try to pick a good time to have a conversation around, you know, when you're chatting to Sarah, it's bringing up stuff for me, you know, and I find myself quite angry, maybe jealous, you know, because we're scared to say it. And have that conversation with somebody. Be transparent about your feelings. The more we bury it, the more it explodes on a night out when you see them chatting and your partner hasn't a clue what the hell's happening here. And I said, the more we're transparent, the more we talk about our feelings, the more we analyze, look at the story that we're telling ourselves and be calm around that, the more we can deal with it.
So going back to what you mentioned there, and going back to what you were saying about there's a reason for jealousy was hardwired into us. I suppose, I've lost my train of thought.
No, you're
there.
Fine. Yeah.
Is there a reason sometimes that our gut is telling us to be jealous?
Of course, it's a warning system. Yeah. Sometimes
we should listen.
Sometimes your partner might be cheating on you, and sometimes there is a relationship developing with the person in work that's just joined, and they're from Spain, and they're divine looking, and your partner's maybe staying in work a little bit longer, and all the rest of it, and you're the system is firing. Of course,
no connection to any person's living. That's a fictional example. Yeah, just in case those exact circumstances.
Isabella's in work. Someone's going, how the hell?
Spanish, he says.
And she was divine.
Okay, so anyway, back to the point.
Of course, that's a warning system, and sometimes it fires because there is. But it's a warning system. That's what I'm trying to get people to understand, to normalise it. It's a warning system to prompt you to act, to correct what's ever happening. So acting is saying, Brendan, you know, is there something going on here? What's happening here? You're spending way more time with this person. What is it in that relationship that you're getting that you're not getting from us? Why do you like her company so much? What's happening there for you? You know, those kind of conversations are really healing and helpful in, okay, you know, letting them simmer and kind of going, you know, secretly checking the phone, all that. That's not kind of like healthy stuff. Sitting down and having a conversation. What is it about her that you like? You know, you seem to be spending a lot of time there. What are you getting from that relationship that perhaps you're not getting here? What could we be doing more together? And that's the healthy kind of conversation.
It's very mature, isn't it?
It is very mature, God forbid.
Okay, here's a tricky one, but I think it's we're all aware of this kind of situation in life. I miscarried in June, and now I feel jealous of the women around me that are pregnant or having babies. I feel so sorry for myself all the time. How can I get over it?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm very sorry to hear that experience. It's a very troubling and emotional experience. Of course, a miscarriage is a terrible experience for anyone to go through. And that's a very common story, Brendan. And there's a lot of families out there, a lot of couples out there trying to have children that they can't have. And they're going through IVF and they're going through all sorts of routes to try to bring a child, you know, to have a child in their lives.
And then they fall off a log, like,
and then they see everybody else just having a child, you know, and you go up to the coombe there and you see all, you see a lot of situations there that are probably, you know, complicated and difficult. And so for a couple like that, I would say it's okay to feel that jealousy. That's what I'm trying to say. It's okay. That's totally normal. That's to see your friends with their children and to be down the playground and you've had a miscarriage. Of course, it's going to bring up incredibly complicated, you know, heavy feelings. Of course, it's to validate those experiences. It's not to get rid of those feelings. It's to validate. Of course, you feel this. You've had a deeply traumatic experience here at this point in your life. That's okay. You know, it's okay to feel those feelings. And maybe, you know, it's to say, if you are going through IVF and you find yourself down with your friends at the playground, try to maybe remove yourself from those kind of situations a little bit right now while you're going through this difficult period in your life. Because you don't know who knows what's going to happen. And so while, you know, I would communicate to my friends, I find it difficult to be around all the kids at the moment because we're struggling at the moment with this, you know, just be open about it. If they're your friends, of course they'll say, of course, don't, you know, and they might arrange time where they're not with their children to meet you so that it's not provoking all that sense of, you know, what I don't have in my life and what I really want in my life. I mean, these are deep things to talk about, you know, and these are deep things that people experience every day. And they are incredibly emotionally, you know, disturbing for us. But we feel them and we have to feel them.
Okay, good answer. just before we finish up, I think we need more information on this one, but maybe take a stab. Is my mother-in-law jealous of me? She's always nasty and puts me down constantly.
I sent that in earlier. She puts me down constantly. Well, there would be, if she's putting you down constantly, there is a fear in there and motivated by a feeling that she probably thinks that you're probably, you know, as they'd say in the old modern terms, her son is punching, you know, and that you might let him down and all the rest of it. And so she feels that she has to put you down to make, I would say, how she feels. If anyone's putting you down, it's always coming back. The light is shining back on you, the person who's putting people down. And so she is a deeply insecure person. And maybe you reflect something about her that she wish she had. And so again, take a deep breath and be a little bit bulletproof when she says her things, but don't be silent and ask her, what does she mean by that? When she makes a little jab, I always say, it's a great little technique. Where's the joke there?
There'll be a daring one at the family gathering.
What do you mean by that?
To eyeball the mother-in-law and say, what do you mean by that?
Exactly.
And look, let's try and understand the mother-in-law as well. Irish mothers, they do love their boys, and it must be hard to see them go off with these women and make another life and everything.
True,
okay, psychotherapist Richard Hogan, that was terrific. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brendan.
We'll take a break.